We're going to switch gears a little bit, talk about global work. So my name is Sudha Jayaraman. I'm actually a trauma surgeon in Virginia, in Richmond. And you might wonder what I have anything to do with public health. And it turns out trauma is actually a public health problem, both in the U.S. and globally. And I actually do have a public health degree from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. Taking over for Mike Abitanos, who's supposed to be doing this talk, who couldn't come today. So thank you for the opportunity to talk about health informatics, information technology, and an innovative global trauma registry. So no disclosures. So trauma is a global epidemic. You all know this already. Over 5 million people die each year worldwide from trauma, and most of it in low and middle income countries. And road traffic crashes are a big cause. You might have noticed that the date on this. This is from the WHO over a decade ago. And that hasn't changed. It's only gotten worse. This is just from The Economist. There was an article earlier this year looking at road traffic crashes alone and looking at low and middle income countries versus rich countries and how it compares to other infectious causes. And so the problem is significant. And our work in this area actually began in the Andean highlands of Cuenca, Ecuador, which is basically in the south of Ecuador. And it just started as a clinical collaboration. A bunch of physicians were doing clinical work with colleagues. And kept seeing a lot of high volume of road traffic injuries. And those are the patients that we needed to provide care for. And we also got to know the staff of the Ministry of Health, and they were particularly worried about the incidence of snake bites in the area. And there was a real disconnect between what we were worried about and what they were worried about. And so, which is probably not too surprising if you've ever been anywhere else. And so this led to a study to say, hey, let's just look at who's coming into the hospital and what they have. We should be able to resolve this pretty quickly. And when we went through that, we actually found that there were a whole lot of things that people had that just weren't captured because they weren't being asked, and especially motor vehicle crashes and falls and other causes of injury. And this is a report from the Department of Statistics for the main public hospital in the area. And anything to do with accidents, in this case it's all in Spanish, but anything to do with accidents really just wasn't being captured. So there was just poor, inadequate data available for that area. And when there were any statistics, it was largely just basic demographics, and there was no other detail associated with it, no sense of injury mechanism or risk factors or outcomes to be able to say anything useful with the information. And keep in mind, this is in the context of a poor country with no pre-hospital emergency care, not enough trained personnel, limited equipment, no specific training in trauma or injury care or continuing medical education, and certainly limited resources to take care of those patients. And so the Ministry of Health was really engaged in our collaboration. We wanted to start thinking more broadly about the systems of care. And much like our systems of care, in any part of our country, when it comes to trauma, we talk about prevention, we talk about pre-hospital care, access to health care, standardized care in the hospital, ability to have a referral network so you can take the patient to a higher level of care if you need to, and the ability to have data to look at that whole process through a standardized trauma registry. And we in the U.S., major academic centers are typically considered level one trauma centers, and they are all mandated to report into a national trauma data bank. And we are benchmarked, and my institution is benchmarked every couple of months, and we look at our rates in a QI process. So the Ministry of Health in Ecuador said, well, you know, we want a system where we can actually track patients throughout the health system. We want to know which hospital they go to, and if they go from hospital A and they get referred to hospital B, do they get there? Do they end up in hospital C because it's easier, closer, whatever it is? And when they get there, will they get there with any of the information that the physicians there, staff there, need to use to actually take care of them? And could we actually get information from all of these different places about what the resource allocation, you know, what our resources are in those places, what's needed, so we can determine resource allocation. And so they wanted to create a sort of referral and counter-referral system. So when given the opportunity to work on this project, my group reached out to our leadership at Virginia Commonwealth University, and we pulled together our experts from various parts of our own institution. We're a major level one trauma center, one of the highest volume centers in the country. We have a center for training and education that is one of the biggest in the state of Virginia. Our EMS program is phenomenal. We frequently have ministers of health from various countries come and visit our EMS systems, and we have an excellent computer and IT support network. And so we pulled all this together to try to create a international trauma system development program that would allow us not just to be clinical collaborators in other places, but work on capacity building together. And so we created a development team to work on an electronic trauma registry, multidisciplinary team with medical staff, with support staff, with IT staff, statistical help, and tried to create an iterative process with weekly meetings and testing it out with our Ecuadorian colleagues to try to create a program that would be effective at different levels of the healthcare system. So whether it's a small district hospital or the main public hospital, you could collect information at all these different levels and try to put it together. And one of our key issues was to identify a set of critical data points that every patient should be asked, or that should be asked of their care. And we came up with about 50 essential elements. And if you were at the big public hospital and you had more time and more resources, you could contribute more information, or you could collect more information on your patients. And there are 200 other elements just related to trauma that we wanted to collect. And we needed to do it in multiple languages, just based on our collaboration and ability to facilitate translation as well. And another key issue over time is. We need to be able to work with and without an internet connection. You can have a small district hospital that has a computer in the ER and has some ability to collect some standardized information, but there's no way for them to share it if they don't have internet infrastructure. And so we need to kind of figure out, well, is there a way we can upload it periodically, or is there a way they can travel to the Ministry of Health, or what mechanisms can we set up that will help with standardized data collection and ability to contribute to a centralized system. And we also needed to create a standardized language. You can't have, as our previous speaker put it, you can't have a different diagnosis or different definition for each diagnosis from hospital to hospital. So we wanted to set up and use the ICD-10 classification system. And the other thing is that if you're getting data from different institutions, you also have to know the acuity, especially for trauma, the acuity of the patient, so you can risk adjust and have risk adjusted outcomes for comparison. And there are several different ways of doing this. You can look at physiologic criteria, what somebody's blood pressure is, what their heart rate is, what their oxygen levels are, which are fairly easy to do at a relatively low resource setting. So you could do that at a clinic or at a district hospital. Or more fancy techniques like anatomic related injury scores that higher resourced settings can use. And we use that mostly retrospectively, kind of to risk adjust. And so we want to have all these things available so that any system in any institution in the system could use any component of this, whatever they had available. And they also had a sense of what else they could do that sort of was the next step. We partnered with the Pan American Trauma Society, which is actually an 18-country organization. It basically brings together trauma and emergency clinicians from across Latin America. And there are multiple courses for them to take, and they have an annual congress, much like this one. And we partnered with them to have a way of having a standardized trauma registry that could be integrated into different country partners. And so we created this Pan-American Trauma Society Trauma Registry. And this trauma registry, basically, it's a web-based system that allows patient data entry, it allows report generation, allows importing and exporting of data, allows users to have specific roles, so you don't have people looking at other people's data, so you could have everybody using the same interface, but their roles are defined with different languages and an integrated help module, again, in multiple languages. And if you were to enter a specific record, you would get a bunch of different tabs, and you'd say, okay, well, what information do I have that I can put in about this patient? And it kind of looks like this. So this is for the full 250 element per person data registry. And keep in mind, we've picked out 50 of the essential elements. So if you wanted to only enter 50 elements per person, you could do that, and you could still run reports, et cetera, from it. So things like demographics, what happened to them, when did it happen, where did it happen, whether alcohol was involved, whether there was violence or suicide, very public health epidemiology questions. Type of injury, whether they were wearing a seatbelt, what kind of was there, what kind of vehicle it was, there were other mechanisms of injury, what those were, and so on, and pre-hospital care. If they were in a setting that where there was pre-hospital care, and what was done, what did the person look like? How stable were they in the pre-hospital setting? Did they deteriorate? Now, if that was not available, then the institution would just skip on ahead and say we don't have pre-hospital care. We can't enter that information. And then what the person looked like when they arrived to the emergency department. This is where all these injury scores are automatically calculated if you put in just the key parameters. So if you only were able to measure their blood pressure and their respiratory rate and their neuro status, well, what did that calculate to be to reflect the acuity of the patient? And if you had access to any kind of imaging, well, what did you did you find on the imaging? Lab work as well. And ultimately, what their diagnoses are and what interventions could be done for them or were done for them. And whether they, and if they died, because in trauma, there's a lot of pre-hospital death and there's a lot of death at the initial contact with the health system in the emergency department. So to try to standardize collecting vital registration information as well was really important. And if they got admitted, then things like, well, what operations do they have? Do they have to be in the ICU? How long did they stay in the ICU? What complications did they have? And then we get to the reference counter-reference system, which is the system that hospitals can use to talk to each other. So the reference page is for a district hospital, let's say, that wants to send a patient on to the referring hospital, and they can just put this information in it. And assuming if they have internet access, they can put it in, and the other facility can see it and actually know what they're getting. The patient doesn't have to bring anything with them. This is something that doesn't actually even exist here in the U.S. But this is something that we've created because the Ecuadorian Ministry of Health really thought this was going to be really valuable for them. And then a counter-reference where the patient gets care at the higher level of care, and then they send information back to the original district hospital to say, well, this is what we did to your patient that you sent us, and this is what you need to follow up on. And this is something that the Cleveland Clinic does here in the U.S., and it's an excellent model for how an organized health system could look or should look. And then report generation. We set this up so that every facility that uses the registry can automatically generate a certain set of reports. They want to know how many patients were admitted to their system, how many patients died, what their acuity was. Those are questions they might want to ask in a periodic quality improvement type program. And if they were more sophisticated and they wanted to actually do research with this information, there was a report generator where they can pick different variables so that you could ask different questions. And when we created this, and keep in mind we created this in an iterative fashion with our Ecuadorian colleagues, created a data collection form that they implemented, and then we created the registry, and then we collected the information to see, well, how good was it, and was it actually feasible? And then we actually went through and recognized that we needed to train all the people who were involved, because it's not a small thing to create a registry and try to implement it. You actually have to have buy-in from the people who are the suppliers of data and buy-in from people who are the demanders of data, the policymakers who are going to take the data and do something with it. And so as a part of a pilot program, we created a training program in injury surveillance in QI that also included how to collect data in a standardized manner, how to enter data carefully, and our registry set up so that we don't have a lot of data-related errors. So there are lots of pre-specified options. There's lots of drop-down menus, all these different things that limit the amount of garbage data that goes in. And then we talked to them about periodic auditing and quality improvement, and we offer tech support. And all the data that is collected by our collaborators is not stored locally. It's stored behind our firewall in order to protect patient information. Because what we couldn't ask for collaborators is whether or not they have adequate IT support locally, because they may not have that. They might have a computer, they might have internet access, but it's a lot to ask for them to keep that information without having viruses, without having breaches in data confidentiality, and that's something that we can assume for them, and that's what we've done. So for now, we have three different countries that we've been involved in, across nine different sites. This is over the last about 3 or 4 years. We've had about 30,000 patients entered, and we're in the process of working with all these different teams across these different settings. And we essentially now have a trauma registry that can function at a hospital level, so you can generate reports of what your hospital is doing, or you can look at the region if you're a Ministry of Health, or across the country if you can't actually use it across multiple institutions, maybe the major institutions in your country, and obviously an international trauma data bank, because we already have three countries involved. And every time we present this at a conference or go to talk about this, there are more and more countries that say, well, you know what, this is what we're trying to create for ourselves. We've gone through the process of creating a local registry, and we're trying to standardize it, and we want to see how we compare to other institutions, other countries, and we want to be able to risk adjust. And so that's what we're trying to do. We're working with more and more institutions in more and more countries. And we're trying to create local benchmarks, regional benchmarks, national benchmarks, much the same as we have in the U.S. across all of our disparate healthcare facilities, whether you're a small little community hospital in rural California or a major level one trauma center. We have the same kind of QI measures. And we're also involved, the program also is set up to have as many as 20 different languages. We're finishing up Portuguese, and we're hoping to start on French next. And we're also involved with the WHO Trauma Registry Working Group, and the WHO is trying to, again, standardize the collection of data, as we've talked about. And they've tried to create a pared-down list of essential elements, of about 30 elements that they think every injury registry should collect. And we've created this essential element list as a way for us to test the 30 elements that they have asked for, which is less than the 50 that we had identified. And our collaborators can choose to use the essential element list or the full complete list. It's a matter of whatever is feasible for each of our collaborating institutions. So that's something that we're testing out next. So that's basically what I have for you. Thank you very much. Really appreciate the opportunity to be here. Questions, thoughts, comments? Yes, ma'am.
What's your back end of that database?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'll have to ask our database folks. We have weekly meetings with our database teams, and so we have a couple of database administrators who work on the back end. So we tried to make the front end of it as user friendly as possible and try to leave a lot of the back end to our specialists, and that's just for ease of use, because otherwise we go and try to do a training program in a small district hospital, and it's just too overwhelming. So we're trying to keep it simplified. But as a clinician, I don't know the answer to that. Anything else? Yes, sir, in the back. So we basically go as a team for several days to a week to an institution that's interested in establishing a trauma registry, and we go over the data collection form, we go over the website, we run reports, we talk about quality improvement, talk about auditing, and we talk with the clinicians, and we talk with the hospital administrators, so that everybody who may be involved are on the same page. And then we basically allow them to use it, implement it in one or more computers, and they have to figure out the staff, if they want to hire any additional staff, if they want volunteers, who they want to enter the actual data into the system. And then we remotely give them tech support, help with analysis, if they want to add elements that we haven't thought about, or if they want to change elements that we haven't thought about, then we work on doing that as well. And then we basically remotely give them feedback. But these are all colleagues that we've known for many, many years. So a lot of the institutions are pretty comfortable working with us. So we can do it. We're fortunate to be able to do a lot of it remotely. And the other benefit is that most of these countries so far are really middle-income countries. And while we have implemented this registry itself at smaller district level facilities, you know, that is something that will take more effort, and that's where we're really working with the ministries of health to say, look, this is actually something that might be valuable even at a smaller scale at smaller facilities, because standardizing the data collection will be really helpful for resource allocation purposes, but it takes a lot of buy-in. So yes, ma'am. So we are working with each of the individual institutions to do that, but our data entry is formatted to really cut down on the entry errors. So there are combined fields that, you know, if you say you have injury mechanism X, then you won't be able to add poisoning, for example, or you have very limited, it limits you. So it really controls what you're entering so you can have good quality information collected. And that's part of our training program, is to say, okay, we're trying to come up with accurate data that then people can use reliably. Yes?
So I'm thinking about the workflow, minimizing the amount of workflow data entry. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming there's two different systems.
Right. So some.
Do they interact? Are you able to transfer that information
through? Well, no, not entirely, because most of the places that we're at don't really have electronic health records. Some of them do, and there is actually interest from some of our partners to try to write for some grants to create programs that allow interoperability. But this is the same thing that we run into in the U.S. You know. Our health institutions don't talk to each other, and their records don't talk to each other unless we're on Cerner or Epic or Kaiser, and so it's the same issues that we run into here. And we'd like to try to make things more interoperable and feed into each other, but that is a lot more challenging. Never mind here, but certainly in other countries. But it would be I agree with you, it would be very valuable, and that would be something that would be of value coming back and bringing it back here and implementing it locally.